The Western was once a mainstay of film in an era where it was okay to make movies that appealed to one gender and one ethnic group. In critical lists of the greatest Western films, Once Upon a Time in the West always makes an appearance, often at the top. This was Sergio Leone's Western opus, a symbolic killing of his Dollars trilogy made without Clint Eastwood, but with a much larger budget than his previous odor outings. At 2 hours and 40 minutes, this one tests the attention span, but is the time investment worth it? Pop open that jug marked with three X's and pour yourself some bourbon as we find out. It's time for episode 94 of Toasting the Classics, Once Upon a Time in the West. Welcome to Toasting the Classics, the podcast where we take something that people call classic and we drink something inspired by it while we talk about it. And then we're going to decide whether it really should be a classic. In this case, we had a hard time with the drink. I thought about doing Sazerac because there was a woman of ill repute from New Orleans in the movie, and I thought maybe that would be appropriate for a New Orleans drink. We'll save that. So we'll try that some other time when we have absinthe to hand, which we don't today. Right. So what did we do? What was the movie?
Well, first of all, what's your name?
Oh, me? Me? I'm Dave MacArthur. I'm not sure anybody's interested in that, though. But yes, I'm Dave MacArthur, and you are?
I am Clint Lanier. Welcome, everybody. This is your pick. So let's start with that. What did you pick?
So the movie fell to me, and I picked a movie I'd heard a bunch about, and I'd never seen. I didn't know much about it, called Once Upon a Time in the West, which is C'era una volta il West in Italian, because this is a Sergio Leone joint. Very I don't know how to say joint. Italian, otherwise I would say that, but
giunto or something. I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. Il giunto.
Il giunto.
Yeah, no, sorry. You just say joint, but you wave your hands in the air while you're saying it.
That makes it you have thing. To say it manically. Giunto.
That's the movie I picked. I've seen it. I actually was going through my way of looking for a movie. I looked at IMDb and I started at the best ranked film of all time by users of IMDb. Mm-hmm. And I just worked my way down until I found a movie I hadn't seen. And this was the first one. This is what I went with. I am very sorry. I want to apologize to you, Clint, because I Gulag Archipelago'd you. This was a nearly 3 hour film.
This is a long movie. Yeah.
It was really long. Normally, the movie week is a time of rest on Toasting the Classics when we have to put a little bit less effort into the prep. But I unfortunately chose just about the longest film that exists.
And, this is a long one. Although I will say, I think the term, when you say you gulag archipelago somebody, that means that you suggest something.
Gulag archipelago.
Yeah, you suggest something.
That's true. That's true.
Terrible. And then you don't even show up. That's the second part of it.
You gotta
actually not be there when it happens. So
that's right. But, I think we've alluded to this before on Toasting the Classics, but this was conceptualized originally as a three-man podcast, and it did not end up that way. The gentleman who was supposed to podcast with us chose an 1,800-page book. I got in three volumes and then bounced and didn't help us.
Right.
So we were stuck talking about this gigantic tome that he had suggested. But anyway,
so at least you're here. You suffered through it with me, and we can talk about it. I had never, I had heard about this movie. Mm-hmm. I had heard about the sequel to this movie. Do you remember what the sequel to this movie is called?
Well, so there's sequels of sorts, right? I don't think that actually contains any of the same characters. There's supposedly, I don't know what the connection is because I've never seen either of the two films.
But what's the name?
The one I've heard of, which is the Robert De Niro movie, Once Upon a Time in America, which I think takes place in like the 20s or something. But the middle chapter of the trilogy is apparently called Duck, You Sucka.
Sucker. Duck, you
sucker.
Sucka.
It's not I'm going to get sucker. You, sucker. But I don't know what that is. I don't know anything about that film.
Right.
Apparently it exists. And this is Sergio Leone. El Joint, right.
I had heard of this movie. I'd heard about the De Niro one, Once Upon a Time in America. But I didn't know anything about this one. And the connection with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood didn't even make that connection which is one of my favorite Quentin Tarantino.
Tarantino was on my mind constantly while I was watching this one.
Yeah,
I was thinking how much he loves this film.
Right. And I didn't even make that connection. Yeah, so I didn't know what to expect. It was kind of cool because I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I sort of did. I knew that it was a Sergio Leone. We've talked about, did we talk about Good, Bad, and the Ugly or Fistful of Dollars?
We did the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, right.
Okay. Yeah. So we talked about that one. And, I've seen that trilogy before.
I have to say, when I chose this film, I did not know it was a Sergio Leone movie. And I might have thought twice about it because it seems like we've gone deep on Batman already. So we do more than one of certain oeuvres.
Yeah, so I didn't know what to expect. Do you want to break the film down for our two listeners?
Yeah, so this is a movie about basically it's I would say the main character plot-wise is probably the woman, wouldn't you agree? And it's basically she's supposed to have married a man who's a homesteader in the West, and she comes out to marry him and settle down with him, but he is massacred by a gang of bandits who are trying to, I guess, make money off of his land eventually. So we sort of follow a couple of different male characters involved in it, none of whom is particularly good, I don't think. I don't think there's a good guy in this movie.
What are they, neutral evil or neutral whatever,
Yeah, I don't know.
whatever
Chaotic
that spectrum is,
neutral,
chaotic
something. Yeah,
neutral? Yeah.
something. There's nobody's good, I don't think.
Yeah,
Uh,
there's nobody
even even
wearing
the even the female, even the female lead is not
right.
particularly
Yeah, nobody
a
wears a
good
white
character.
hat.
No white hats in this one. Basically, there's just this triangle between these three men essentially trying to help her or maybe get her money. I don't and one has a hidden motive in the whole thing, which you don't really learn about until the very end. It's sort of hinted at that Charles Bronson, so the main three, Charles Bronson plays Harmonica, who's a sort of mysterious guy with a troubled past who seems to have a beef with this guy Frank. Jason Robards plays a bandit named Cheyenne. And Jason Robards is cool in this. And when I saw him, I was like, was that guy ever young? Is he ever like in his 30s? Because I remember seeing him, he was in the movie Quick Change, which must have come out in like 1993, 94, which is 25 years after this movie. He doesn't look a day younger or older in those two movies. He looks like he was the exact same age in 1968 that he was in 1993. I don't know how that's possible. And then I think the guy who steals the movie, and that's hard, tough to say because I think Jason Robards is awesome and Charles Bronson is Charles Bronson, right? But I think Henry Fonda steals this picture. I think he's the except for how beautiful Claudia Cardinale is, which is
Oof.
definitely part of watching the movie.
Yes.
But in terms of the acting and the character, I thought Henry Fonda as a villain is amazing. I could watch him be that guy all day. Like, I thought that's a great villain.
I mean, Henry Fonda's I think a multiple Academy Award winner. So, I
Think
mean,
so. Yeah,
he's
I'm
got the
trying to
act
think
he's got
about
the acting chops. He's playing against
absolutely,
type.
yeah.
He's playing against type here, totally against type. And I think this is his first movie where he played against type. He took it, I think, specifically because he thought that would be interesting. You know, he's a bad guy. He's never a bad
Yeah.
guy. He's Henry Fonda, you know. And I mean,
I
he was
saw a
in.
really funny. I looked up the movie on YouTube. Sometimes I like to look up and see if anybody's commented on the film or something. But there's an interview with Dick Cavett, which must have been, I don't know, in the mid 70s at some point between him and Henry Fonda. And he asks Henry Fonda, he's like, "Have you ever played a villain in a movie?" And Henry Fonda's like, "Yeah, I played this guy who murders children and stuff." And the whole point, Sergio Leone wanted me for this movie because he wanted to do the pan up, some bad guy does dirty deeds and then the camera pans up and oh my God, it's Henry Fonda that's playing it and get a big laugh. Dick Cavett had never heard of this film. He was
Really?
like, Henry Fonda described like the whole opening sequence and he was like, "And did they end up making that movie?" And he's like, "Yeah, it was a pretty big success. Not in America. It wasn't a big success in America, but yeah, it was a big success in Europe. Once upon a time in the West." So,
Because this is number 25 on, I think, AFI's best films ever or something like that. So it's
but I think so much of
this is in
that
the
is.
Library of Congress for a work of
Yeah, they selected it for preservation. I
creative,
think a
you
lot of
know.
that is based on the opinion of people like Scorsese that said he really loved it, and then obviously Quentin Tarantino. I think it's people who were big filmmakers in the 80s and 90s talked about this one after the fact. I don't think this made much of an impression in
No,
America
I
at the
mean
time.
Roger Ebert covered it critically and liked it. I think he had a lot of critics. I think that was a thing. Is this really this appeals to critics for a lot of reasons. I mean, there's the wide shots and stuff, but he sort of did that too already in, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And he's sort of known for these huge landscape shots as well as the squinty eyes. You know, there's that theme in one of them where it's like it flashes between Tuco and Blondie, and then the other bad guy. You know, it's like it flashes to
Yeah,
their
the guns in the
squinty eyes
car.
the whole time, right? When they're in the cemetery or whatever. And so you have that kind of back and forth scene. And so there's a lot of shots that are pretty identical to some of those old shots, but
I got the feeling while watching this movie that this was like, and this was a shorter time scale for Quentin Tarantino, but he did Reservoir Dogs, and I thought it was like this great movie. And then he got a bunch of money and like wide studio release to do Pulp Fiction.
And
I remember my first impression of seeing Pulp Fiction is I was like, yeah, I saw Reservoir Dogs. I know how this guy does his movies. And it was only over time that I really got to love Pulp Fiction. Like, I appreciate it on its own. But this felt like, yeah, this is Sergio Leone. If you give this is more money and better actors. Well, not Clint Eastwood. Obviously, Clint Eastwood was a phenomenon, but you got Henry Fonda and you got Charles Bronson and you got really high power money in studio. So I th sort of thought it was similar to that. Kind of like if you let this guy run wild in a major studio, what would he do?
I like the sense of humor in this movie. There's that opening scene.
I say that this movie was filled with stars, but you know what I thought was funny is it's like in fantasy baseball, you often put together a team called a Stars and Scrubs team, where you have like two or three of the best players, and then you just have terrible players for the rest of it. And I feel like that's what this movie did. It was the Stars and
I
Scrubs
think that's what he does. That's sort of what he does.
line.
But the opening scene, the very opening scene where it's at this train station and there's going to be kind of the first showdown, pretty much. There's a character in there named Jack Elam. Do you know who that is? He's the guy with the crooked eye at the very beginning. Okay. And he's been in every single Western movie of the 60s and TV shows of the 50s and 60s. Like if you
Oh,
watch
I didn't know
Gunsmoke,
that.
if you watch, any of those old, any of those old TV shows, he inevitably shows up. If they have like a, and back then they do like a 20 episode season, right? So you have a 20 episode season and he would be in episode 3 and 7 and 9, one he's playing the ranch hand and the other, I mean, he's always in all those movies, but he's hilarious in this scene where he has that fly that's on his, this fly lands on his mouth. And so he spends about 5 minutes trying to blow it off his face.
And then
Never
catches
works.
it in the gun.
Gig finally catches it in the gun barrel, but it's hilarious. It's just that guy. There is a movie out there I recommend, sort of satirizing the genre. It was called Support Your Local Sheriff, I think is what it's called. And it
Oh, I remember
has,
that with James Garner.
with James Garner and Jack Elam. This guy plays his sidekick in the movie. He's only his sidekick because James Garner is faster than him, like basically outshoots him. And the guy's, it's hilarious.
I'm just thinking of one of those chameleons from Madagascar that like its eye can go one way and the other one can go a different direction. I kept thinking of one of those when I was looking at that guy's that Jack Elam's
I
face.
know. It's hilarious.
In the early shootout, did you notice who the other actor was? There's a black guy that's in the three.
Yes. Well, they call him
And I was
Knuckles,
like,
but.
where do I know that guy from? And I actually had to look it up. He was in Spartacus, which we also covered. He plays Spartacus's buddy. And I can't remember the actor's name.
Al Mulock or Woody Strode?
No, Woody Strode. It's Woody
Woody
Strode. That's
Strode.
it.
Yeah, so
So
that
I
was
got
a
him.
it was a great opening scene, shootout scene and everything. And it's like I said, it's pretty trademark that throughout it's pretty trademark Sergio Leone. So what is it about this that makes this the 25th best of all time versus The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, you've got some of the same elements that kind of drag down this the what's the Dollars trilogy, I guess it's called. The things that drag it down, you get the bit actors are terrible. The dub is terrible.
Well, that's true.
It's there's they can be slow. There's moments that go on for, you could easily say they go on for too long. I
So it's
mean,
just the budget. It's the budget then,
I
maybe.
think the budget is bigger on this one, and I do think the quality of the film is better. I think Henry Fonda is like 40% away. I thought this movie was worth watching. I thought he was just great as a villain. I don't know. It seemed like there was a little like just more money going into the production. The sets look better and things like that. I thought that the big wide shots were there's more of that in this than there were in the original film. In the original, yeah, in the original,
Well, so, and
the dollars
some of
and.
this was filmed, so they did film some of it in Monument Valley. So, because it has those like iconic, Western scenes. It's like a John Ford movie with the big towering stuff.
Go
As a
ahead.
side note, did you know that a lot of those actors that worked regularly on those types of movies, a huge and overwhelming majority came down with all these different weird kinds of cancer? And this is
Oh,
in the
because of the
60s and
nuclear testing
70s.
out there.
Because of the nuclear testing, not too far away. It was like 150 miles away. And so all the dust and radiation blown over. Isn't that insane?
I think people of that generation, a lot of them got cancer as they
Yeah,
got
well, that's
older. I
true.
mean, I
That's
don't even
true.
know if it was necessary. I mean, people say that about John Wayne, that it was because of the nuclear testing when he was filming those movies and especially Genghis Khan for some reason. I don't know. I think a lot of people got cancer though.
All right, what are we drinking?
So are we drinking? The drink is not going to be a big part of the show, I don't think,
No,
because I
it's
really
not. But
couldn't
it's got
come
to be
up with
something
anything.
good. You're
Yeah.
saying at the top, but when I so rudely interrupted you, that you want to do a Sazerac because
Yeah.
one of the main characters, the female who is drop dead gorgeous, Italian actress,
Absolutely. Like Sophia
she,
Loren, gorgeous, like that
yeah, I
girl,
mean, I
like.
don't know why she had. I had to look her up. I'm like, what else has she been in? She was in quite a bit, but like, why wasn't she
She was in
on
eight.
everybody's
She was in
radar?
Eight and a Half. That's Eight and a Half, the Fellini movie. She was in that. So that's probably, I would think, her number one, or maybe
Number
this
one
is her
role, yeah,
number one picture.
could be,
I don't know.
but
That's a big one.
anyway, so she's essentially a soiled dove, as they would call it, from New Orleans, and
Never heard that term.
go to Tombstone. It's prominent in actually in that movie Tombstone, and when you go to Tombstone, it's all over the place. But she was a soiled dove.
I want to open a bar called The Soiled Dove.
Oh, the
I think
soiled
that'd
dove, yeah. Put a red
yeah.
light in front of it. So Sazerac would come from New Orleans. Sort of makes sense. I just didn't have enough time to get the stuff for it because he popped me with it today. So instead, we're just having whiskey. I got Evan Williams because I refuse to buy anything expensive.
Oh, what?
Are you doing Jack or what are you doing?
Jim
Oh,
Beam.
Jim Beam. Yeah, very close. Very close to it.
Well,
That'll work.
I'm one state to the north, but more or less the same thing, you know,
Yeah.
for all intents and purposes, I think.
Although I am drinking it. Now, this is a shot glass. Okay. Look at the size of this thing. This is a shot glass that I bought. If you go to Tombstone, Arizona,
Yeah.
and you go to pretty much any of the bars, they sell these. These are like the shot glasses that you see in a Western movie. They weigh about 20 pounds, and you could probably kill somebody with it. I'm not going to shoot this, though. I'll be sipping it.
You know what? I missed the trick here because we have a set of glasses that we got at one point that they have a light motif on them of a map of all the different cities that we've lived in. So
Oh,
we have
cool.
one from New York, one from New Orleans, one, and I didn't choose the New Orleans glass.
Ah,
I've
that would have been, see,
got the
that would have been
Manhattan one.
something at least. Whenever they're drinking out of a brown bottle. You have no idea what's in it. He pulls the cork out with his teeth.
Did
What's that?
people in the West just drink whiskey in the middle of the day on a regular basis? Like they're out there working in the sun and they're drinking
Everybody,
whiskey? I can't
Dave, everybody did.
imagine.
Everybody. Yeah, everybody did.
I find that hard.
The book I'm writing, it has pretty prominently in chapter two, I discussed this about how much whiskey people drank, and people drank it all the time. It was drank morning, noon, and night. It was drank by kids. I mean, every walk of
But was
member
it
of
watered
society.
down?
It would have to be. Yeah.
It would have to
Otherwise, I
be,
mean, out of
wouldn't
the still is literally rot your gut.
I used to have this same thought about when you read about ancient Greece, they just talk about the drinking wine just all day, all the time. And I was, how's, and then one time I saw a reference, they were criticizing somebody for not mixing water into his wine when he drank. And it suddenly occurred to me, I'm like, okay, if you drank wine that was like 3%, you could drink it all day.
In Greece, it was really frowned upon to be drunk. Drunkenness was not something that
Right.
they celebrated. And I'm not saying that they celebrated it anywhere else, but it wasn't a big deal. If somebody got tipsy or whatever, who cares? No, but they did drink it all the time for a lot of reasons. There's the calorie. Each shot is about 100 calories, so there's the energy basically that it provides. It was
Right.
also a really good way to store or get rid of extra grains and so forth. If you think about it, they didn't have transportation like we do now. So if you had this huge crop of corn, you're only going to sell or eat so much of it. They have to do something with the rest because you don't want it to go to waste. So you'd make whiskey out of it. So it was
Right.
abundant, in other words. It was also healthier than typically than water because especially municipal water was pretty rancid because people would throw raw sewage in it and stuff like that. So they weren't the brightest of people back then, although we came from those people, so whatever.
I wonder with the like alcohol dehydrates, right?
Yes,
But I
yes.
wonder how much would you need to water down your whiskey to have it start providing hydration? Like for the dehydration to be outweighed by
Right.
the amount of water you're drinking in it. I feel like again, if you watered it down to beer level, you might be getting more water out of it than
That I
what
don't
I'm.
know, but I do know that you'd have to water it down quite a bit. I mean, beer is, let's say, 5% alcohol by
Yeah.
volume. The
Right.
whiskey that we're drinking is about 80% alcohol by volume. 80 proof, yes, 40% alcohol by volume. So you'd have to water it down quite a bit.
That's what we're drinking anyway today,
That's what we're
so
drinking. That's sort of what they drank. We'll stick to that. Although it wasn't a big part of
it
it. I
always feels
mean,
appropriate for Westerns to have whiskey, I think. It just
how long would this movie be if you took away the 5 minute camera pans and, focusing on somebody's eyes for 2 minutes? If you took all those Sergio Leone shots away, this movie would probably be about 45 minutes long.
There's two things I want to say about that. First of all, I have a theory that when you make a film, The film should be 120 minutes. If it's shorter, add something. If it's longer, cut something. Because 120 minutes is exactly the length of attention span that I think you can tell a good story in a film with. I don't know. That's just a theory of mine. I don't know what other people think of that. But the other thing I'm thinking is that what I kind of was thinking about in this movie, and I've picked up on it before in other Westerns that I really like The Unforgiven has a big aspect of this. They're always psychological. They're like psychological dramas in a way that no other action genre, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger or like Die Hard, which is a great action film, let's say. There's not a lot of psychology going on in that film, a little bit, but not the same way of like two guys against each other kind of thing. Like what goes on when two people decide to fight, and that goes on in a Western in a way that lends itself to slow, quiet scenes. And Sergio Leone picked up on that. And there's just a lot of, you know, those guys like showing the scene with the guy with the fly and what they're all, the guy with the water dripping on his head and stuff. Yeah. And all that is about showing these are hard guys that are waiting to kill somebody. And this is what they're doing while they wait to kill somebody.
Yeah. And it builds tension. And it's that tension, supposedly work there. You know, again, I'm thinking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There's a great scene in there when Tex, I don't think it was Manson, but it was Tex and somebody else was in a car. They roll up to the house where they eventually end up killing everybody. And they're just sort of waiting outside the gate, but the gate's closed, so they can't get in. And Leonardo DiCaprio's character comes out and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here? You hippies, get out of here." And you see them, they're like, they look at each other and you're like, you're thinking, oh man, something's going to happen. And so the music kind of intensifies, but then it goes down and they drive away. So it's like in that little moment. And so there's this tension that builds up.
It's not just that. There's that other scene where they go to the Manson village and Brad Pitt's like walking down the street of the Manson village. And you're like, everybody's going to pop out the windows and start shooting everyone all of a sudden. There's going to be a gunfight here and it just doesn't happen. But the tension is like you cut it with a knife.
But he's at the village and Texas coming down from the hill. Yeah. Yeah, he's beating the crud out of that one dude. Well, he does it here. I mean, Leone is really good at it. Let's talk about him for a moment. He's an interesting character.
I don't know much about the man himself, about Leone as a person.
Well, you know, he's Polish. Okay. I wish you could see the look on Dave's face if I said that. Come on, Dave.
You never know.
You need a sense of humor, man. What's Virginia done to you? I mean, his name is
Sergei, maybe. If his name is Sergei...
Leonsky. Well, you know, by now he has established his name. He created, by the time this movie came around, he had created the spaghetti Western motif. And by now Clint Eastwood had left him and it was a very public breakup. Like he said, he didn't want to have anything to do with him. Apparently he's very controlling. Eastwood just couldn't get along with him anymore. And so there's a famous picture it was the outlaw Josie Wales, I think that he made. I think it was his first movie after Sergio Leone's. After he split with him.
Is that the one where he has like the little hideaway village and he joins with the native people and they fight back against his family gets killed in the beginning. It's the Civil War.
Yes.
That's a good one. That's a good movie.
It is. And there's a promo film, promo photo for it, taken for it. And it's him kneeling by a gravestone and he's in his Josie Wales costume. It's him kneeling by a gravestone and the gravestone says RIP Sergio Leone. And he was really adamant about, you know, nothing to do with it with him. Although he established Clint Eastwood, right? I mean, he made him what he was. But
did you read about the idea that he had for this film, where he wanted to have, in the sequence where you find out where harmonica comes from, like why he hates Frank, which I guess we can talk about separately. But anyway, it's a pretty powerful scene. But he wanted to have Clint Eastwood, Eli Wallach, and Lee Van Cleef.
Really?
He wanted to have those three guys be in that scene because it's a hanging scene and have it be a symbolic killing of the Dollars trilogy. And I was I was like, that's great. I really like that idea, except that's a very emotional scene. And I feel like you get a big laugh from that scene. Right. If you saw Clint Eastwood and Eli Wallach standing there.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird, huh?
It would throw it off. But fortunately, I think for how the movie turned out, Clint Eastwood just wanted nothing to do with it and neither did Lee Van Cleef wasn't available. Eli Wallach was all about it for some reason. he probably wasn't working.
I was going to say he wanted to work. What did you think about Charles Bronson in this role?
I thought Charles Bronson's really cool. I like him. He's got a great face and he's really understated. which is
Yes.
perfect for Sergio
Yes.
Leone. But I was trying to think, have we done a Charles Bronson movie before? Because I feel like we talked about him.
I don't think
Maybe
so. I
we just
mean,
talked about Charles Bronson, but it
you
seemed
know, a
like he
good
was
movie
in.
for us to do sometime would be The Dirty Dozen, which he's in,
Yes.
me think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm all
Or
in.
The Magnificent Seven,
Or The Magnificent Seven. Yeah, it's weird. We haven't covered any Charles Bronson movies. You know
right.
what I've never seen is Death Wish. I would do that, but.
They showed that on TV back when we were kids. They would show these censored versions of movies.
Oh, yeah.
And what was funny about that is, I mean, they would censor language and they'd censor nudity, but they would show everything, every violent
All the
episode,
killing.
some yell the killing. Yeah, go right ahead. But we mentioned what was her name? Claudia
Claudia Cardinale.
Cardinale. Oh my gosh. What a babe. Doesn't have a lot of speaking. You know, she speaks. I mean,
Probably for the best.
Leone, with the exception of Frank. Frank had pretty well, Frank and Cheyenne had most of the lines in the movie. Bronson has a very thick accent, even then. So
All
he
right.
didn't speak in any of his movies. He didn't speak very much. Yeah, I
Oh,
think he
but
might be hung.
he's
I think
Polish,
he's
right?
hung.
Isn't he
Yeah, I was gonna
Polish?
say maybe Hungarian.
But he's got some good one-liners. He's got the one the guys are like, "Oh, sorry, we're short one horse," and he's like, "No, you brought too many," and then he kills them all.
He was Lithuanian. He was born
Interesting.
in Pennsylvania, but his parents were Lithuanian. Well,
That's
he did
awesome.
have some great lines in there. I think, you know, he was really all about facial. I mean, it was a lot of just sort of what was going on with his looks. There's a scene here where it's on the train, where he's supposed to be tied up on the train. Frank has ridden away, and he's sort of like a prisoner on the train. And Cheyenne proceeds to like go up and over and around and all manner of crawling around on top and outside of this train to kill the bad guys inside the train. And
Right.
throughout it, all you see is Bronson. He'll look, you know, wherever Cheyenne happens to be and just sort of cock his head and smile or something like that. It's a hilarious scene. I mean, because Bronson's face, just his expressions just make it funny, you know?
And Robards has some pretty goofy kills in that scene. Like he sticks
Yeah,
his
he
boot
does.
down, and
His
apparently
boot,
the
yeah.
gun is in the boot. And I'm
Is
like,
in the boot, yeah.
how would you aim that? I don't know. Just
I
wait
don't
up.
know, but it was funny.
It was good. It was a funny bit. But have we talked about the Kuleshov effect before on the podcast? It's this idea that like theorists of film have that you could show a face that doesn't move or not, or yeah, a face that doesn't move. It has to be a face because what you do is if you show it and you play certain music and you put it in certain contexts, the audience fills in the emotions to the face. And it's like,
Oh,
for
I
instance,
see.
like Darth Vader's face never changes. It's just
Right.
a helmet, right?
Yes.
But depending on how you frame him, he can seem angry, he can seem scary, he can seem sad, he can seem wistful. It just depends
Yes.
on what's going on. And I think that's the theory behind Charles Bronson's acting. I think he's just like, look at this face. This face, it might as well be a leather mask because it's very leathery. He's got these great big hoods over his eyes. And I think if you show him kind of squinting at something, you're thinking, oh, that's quizzical. He's being quizzical
Yes.
there. And the next time
Yeah,
you're like, he's really angry. And
but all they
so I
do is
think,
all he does is squint.
yeah, exactly.
His eyes were never open. Whoever invented sunglasses would have made a killing in the Old West because all they do is
Oh,
squint.
yeah, I was thinking that. I was
But
literally thinking that in this movie. Yeah,
what's funny
exactly.
is they're all wearing hats and they're still squinting. Like the hats
Well,
apparently do no good at all.
I mean, half of the people in the movie have blue eyes. I don't know if you know what
Well,
it's
that's
like to be
true.
a blue-eyed man in the desert. I think you probably know a little something
Yeah,
about this, but
I might know a bit about that, but still, I wear a hat, and the hat helps a bit, you know?
for years and years, I always, like I'd be on the baseball field or something, and the glare is just killing me because of the blue eyes. And I always wondered, why on earth would anybody be born with blue eyes? And I re you know what I realized about it? I see better at night than other people. It's the flip side of not being able to see in bright
Just see
sun,
during the day?
because I
Well,
actually,
maybe,
my eyes absorb more light. I can see better in the dark than other people. So
yeah,
anyway,
perhaps so. You know, there's something about the way Leone's characters look. They always look dirty and grimy.
this one, everybody looks like they really need it. There's talk of
It,
baths, but no
they
baths
they need a
happen.
bath. Yeah, they everybody needs a bath. And it was sort of like that. Was it Pucco or whatever that guy's name
Tuco,
in the
right?
Tuco? Yeah, Tuco, not Pucco. Tuco always looked grimy and sweaty and terrible. You know, but everybody in this one, everybody looks like that. And so this is 64, I believe. Is that right?
68.
68.
68. It's
Okay.
pretty late in the game, really.
Yeah, pretty late in the game. But it was still, you know, John Wayne was still making them, and he always looked clean
I was thinking about this one because obviously the train is
and
coming to town and the train is coming the whole time, right?
yeah.
And I was thinking, I think that's a metaphor for like the closing of the West, right? The train is coming and all
I
these
think so,
guys,
yeah.
their livelihood as Western, combatants is going to be ending. And I was thinking,
Yeah.
is this movie kind of closing the door on the era of the Western in film?
Yeah.
Because it's really the 50s and 60s is where most of, I mean, and before that, obviously 30s,
Yeah.
40s, 50s, 60s, but
Right.
there's the spaghetti Westerns, which kind of rejuvenated it in the early 60s. But then I was trying to think, am I wrong? Like there's things in the, there's like Silverado in the 80s, Unforgiven in the 90s. But those are definitely somebody, that's like when you hear a jazz record from today, it's like, oh, we're going to do something people used to do and show you what it's like today. I don't really know if there was ever like a really big Western boom in films after this. Was there? Am I?
I'm gonna tell you there was actually, because I didn't know, so I just looked it up. But in the 1970s, you've got High Plains Drifter, Outlaw Josey Wales, Joe Kidd, Rio Lobo, The Cowboys, Two Mules for Sister Sarah. Just going off the ones I've heard of. Little Big Man, remember that one? Chino. You've actually got a lot of Charles Bronson ones. There are still a lot of them, but you know what? They're getting different. I mean, I'm just going down the list here, and you can see that.
They're
Well, they are.
artsy. What's the one that's very like Cat Ballou? You ever see that one?
Yeah, Cat Ballou. That's a funny
They're
one.
things like
That
that, they're
that's a
just
funny one. Yeah, they're either funny, yeah, because they're either satirizing, like the genre itself. The point is, they're not the clean cut hero wears a white hat type of movies that were in the 50s and early 60s.
It's not High Noon. I think they're all sort of
Yeah.
play. This one I think was consciously riffing off High Noon to some extent. And
Yeah.
then
Yeah.
there was a list of other movies. Maybe I don't know the early, I don't know the pre-1968 Westerns very well. So I kind of didn't get like I've never seen The Searchers. I have seen Shane. I'm kind of familiar with the genre to some extent. I have to admit to a little bit of when I was a kid, my dad would put on Westerns and I sort of thought of it as like a boring genre that my dad liked. And
Sure.
then I think as I got to be in my 20s, I was like, oh, this is a great genre. Like I started to appreciate the psychological
Yeah.
dimension. Like I liked the World War II movies much better when I was a kid watching my
Yeah.
dad's old
Oh, so did
movies.
I. I love those. They still had the same type of atmosphere, I guess, or approach, which was that the good guys were clean shaven. The good guys were like approachable. They never cursed. They never womanized, never did anything like that, right? The good guys were good. And I mean, the war movies were basically just a Western, but set in war, essentially. And I think in the 60s, late 60s, I think beginning with the spaghetti Western, and I'm gonna venture and say, the Dollar Trilogy, I think that sort of broke the genre because it made them grittier and dirtier. And in that one, you've got the protagonist doesn't wear a white hat. He's trying to get money. He's good in that he doesn't like rape women and kill people indiscriminately, but he's not there to try to stop the bad guy.
I wish I could talk about this more intelligently, but I would venture to say that the anti-hero sort of comes about in the
Yeah,
60s. And I could be
maybe.
wrong.
Yeah,
I
maybe so.
can't think of where that started, but I definitely know, like, for instance, the Batman that like we enjoyed in the 80s is the
Yeah.
anti-hero, right? He's
Right.
very different from the Batman that existed before that, which
Right.
was, well, no, originally he was pretty dark, but the one in the 50s and 60s is a
Yeah, it
corny.
was a cartoon character, right? It was a caricature,
But
but
the
so I
anti-hero
think.
came up. I think that a lot of it, I think a lot could be said for the baby boomers
Yeah.
dominated culture for such a long time, and they got to an age of like psychological maturity at about the time where you start
Right.
seeing anti-heroes because they were interested in psychological
Yeah.
maturity.
Well, and I think also the fantasy of America had began to disintegrate a little bit in the 60s.
I think for the
Yeah.
same reasons. I think it's because
With
you've got
the
this huge
Vietnam
cohort.
War and the resistance to the Vietnam War, and then you've got, and in the 70s for sure. But see, you look at all the movies in the 70s, look how gritty we were, man. You got the French Connection, you got, these very gritty kind of dark gray movies. I mean, nothing was bright, really.
I think that's why Star Wars hit as hard as it did and
Yeah.
Rocky. I think those two
Right.
films were just like, hey, remember when there was just a hero that you could root
Yeah.
for?
Yeah, maybe
Like,
so. Yeah.
and the movie was fun and you feel good when
Yeah.
you walk out of the theater. Remember
Right.
that? Let's try
God, there
that.
were some There are some depressing movies in the 70s, man. I mean,
But
just
they're great.
depressing.
They're great movies. Obviously, that kind of a film is more sophisticated.
The French
French
Connection's
Connection, yeah.
depressing movie. It really
What is
is.
that
It is.
character's Popeye? Popeye,
Popeye Doyle. Popeye Doyle.
Popeye Doyle. Yeah, Popeye Doyle,
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
And I mean,
Yeah, I
it's
did find that
terrible.
scene.
He kills his partner and then like still proceeds to rush off, and it's a terrible movie. I mean, it's a great movie. It won Academy Award, I think, for best screenplay and I think best actor, but
I think it was Best Picture, was it not?
I think it might have been best picture, yeah. But it was, man, it was depressing,
Dark.
Papillon. I mean, there's all these terrible, dark. This is sort of, I think that's a great metaphor. I like that. It's the train is sort of ebbing in technology and like a modern world. He sort of picks that up because I think Once Upon a Time in America is like the 1920s or something, isn't it?
Once Upon a
Anyway,
Time in America, I think, is in the 20s, if I remember right. But I haven't
okay.
seen it.
Set in the
So I'm.
20s. It was the
No, it's an
Italian
80s movie.
immigrants and stuff like
It's
that.
maybe
Oh.
70s movie. Sorry, it's a young De Niro. This
Anyway.
one, I think there's definitely a theme of the end of the West, I think, in this
Yeah.
movie. Well,
I think
first of all,
that's a good
the
point.
title of the film is Fairy Tale, right? Once Upon a Time in the West. Well, though, that's a
Right.
translation because actually the Italian literally means Once Upon a Time there was the West, which is even
Interesting.
more saying the West is
Yeah,
gone.
even more. Yeah. So it is,
So
it's fantasy fairy tale. Yeah, absolutely.
right. So they both are talking
Which,
about something that happened. And there's.
that's an interesting point is that if you look at the West outside of the West, I'm certainly biased because I live here, so I'm steeped in it every single day. But if you're in Germany or Italy or somewhere in Europe, the West is a myth, right? Beginning in
Right.
the, with like Have Gun Will Travel and all, like the really old ones, the Roy Rogers and all those other ones, the Singing Cowboys and stuff, and I guess the 40s and 50s. So Sergio Leone, I think, was probably born, I'd say, in the 20s or 30s, just as
Sounds
a
about right.
guess. But he was growing up seeing the West from Europe. You know what I mean? So he's
Right.
seeing the myth of the West is the myth of America. It's a
Right.
bunch of people who pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and conquered the land and conquered the people on the land and made America for themselves, right? And so this is what America is saying that we did. Europe is seeing this myth. But that's really interesting to have an Italian.
I think I can prove with data that what you're saying is exactly correct. This film made about $3 million in the United States.
Right.
It was the number one film of the year in France and played for 2 straight years in the theaters to the point where a projectionist that met Sergio Leone like threatened to punch him in the face for making him play this movie for 2 straight years.
Over and over, yeah.
In Germany, I
Yeah.
think it was the third biggest movie of all time,
Yeah.
like to date. I mean, this movie was huge in Europe and just died in America to the point where Dick Cavett had never heard. He was interviewing Henry Fonda. He'd never heard of this
Never
movie.
heard of the movie.
I think it said something about the myth of the West more to people who aren't from the United States
Yeah.
in some kind of strange way. I don't really know how to unpack that or why it was just for Europeans. Maybe it's just the quality of the filmmaking. I think Americans, to
Yeah.
some extent, they're just not as interested in the techniques of filmmaking, the way you can get a French audience to sit there and appreciate things in a different way. I think Americans
Yeah.
want to be entertained for 120 minutes, and there's nothing wrong with that. Americans work really hard, and we deserve
Yeah.
a break,
I don't know.
you
I
know.
think it might be something. I mean, when he shot like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it was novel. Like the way he made a movie was a novel approach. So flash forward, and that had to have been early 60s, 62, let's say, or something like that. So flash forward almost a decade, he's doing the exact same approach with a bigger budget now. It just, I don't know if it was novel at that point. You know what I mean? I
Yeah.
think it was. And then also, by the time that comes around, other people are ripping off his approach, which he borrowed from other people. Like I mentioned, John Ford. John Ford was famous for these huge landscape shots,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
He does that in this movie. A callback to John Ford, especially, and he even has Monument Valley, which is totally a callback to Ford,
Yeah,
right?
definitely. Definitely.
By the time this one comes out, people have, seen that, done that. I will say, I don't know if it's our attention span. I wouldn't necessarily agree with attention
I
span.
don't mean
I would,
attention
I
span.
would, I would argue novelty. And I would say that we'll sit for 2.5 hours for something new versus even 1.5 hours, something we've seen before. And in this case,
Yeah.
you've got 2.5 hours of something we've seen before. That's 10
Yeah.
years old. I mean, he
Yeah.
had his style of movie making, and he just sort of repeated it, right? So.
I think some of it also might have to do with, you hear Sergio Leone, you want to see Clint Eastwood, right? You want to see Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood was in other films at this time. You could go see him in something else. Henry Fonda as the villain is a surprising, weird casting choice that I'm sure. I've always had this theory that a lot of the movies that flopped in history that were actually good movies is because you told everybody they were going out to dinner for Italian, and then you plopped down delicious Thai food. And everybody was like, what the? I was in the mood for Italian. I hate this movie.
You got me you got me all hungry for
There
Italian.
was this great movie that came out in the mid 90s called Fresh, and they billed it as this gangster picture, Boys in the Hood, Juice kind of thing. And I went to see it, and it's this like great psychological drama about a little kid trying to deal with and escape the hood. It's not a gangster movie at all. It's just a complete, and it's great. It's got all these amazing actors in it, really early in their career. Terrific movie. But nobody went to, everybody just was like, oh, this is terrible. And nobody went to see it. And I think it was that. It was because it was the wrong movie. People just, they wanted something else, and they went to, they just weren't interested because it was marketed the wrong way.
No, I think that's a really good point. So it comes down to expectations. It's funny because according to the critics, what makes this such a masterpiece is the selection of Henry Fonda as like the bad guy. And he's an over the top bad guy. He's a monster in this movie.
He's a really bad guy too. Yeah, exactly. Like
So
almost as bad as the villain in Shane, who I think I'm trying to think who plays him. Jack Palance in Shane is like one of my
Jack Palance, yeah.
favorite villains in a Western movie ever.
Yeah. I think with every creative enterprise that somebody takes on, the creator of that creative enterprise, whether it's the painter, the writer, the director, whatever, if they want to do something memorable, they're going to roll the dice on something. I think the separation between a winner and a loser is it's not that much. Like the degree is very small. So you roll the dice and you pick and you say, I'm going to pick somebody totally out of type that nobody would expect. I'm gonna pick like America's dad or something,
You mean like have Bill Cosby? Like have Bill Cosby do it? I mean,
that's why I
it's
said
so hard to
at the
imagine.
time. But let's back up. I mean, think of this. Henry Fonda, if I remember correctly, he played The Longest Day. I think he was General some. He was one of the top generals in The
He's
Longest
Teddy
Day.
Roosevelt, isn't he?
No, he wasn't Roosevelt in The Longest Day.
Well,
He
he's the
was one
one
of the
that dies at
generals.
the end, right? He's like the highest ranking guy to die at D-Day, he plays. I can't remember what
Fonda,
the.
I think he might be. Yeah, doesn't he also play? Who's the admiral in World War II? Nimitz. I think he played Nimitz in a World War,
Like in
another
Tora
World War
Tora.
Tora or something like that. Yeah,
Oh
and
no,
no,
I know
it
what
was
you.
the
I
Coral
can
Sea
picture.
Battle of the Coral. It's
Yeah,
Battle of the
I
Coral
can
Sea.
picture him. That's right.
So basically, the point is, he's an American hero. Like that's what he
Right,
plays.
right, right.
It's like having Jimmy Stewart play the bad guy or something like that. It's just, wait a minute, you
Yeah,
can't
I
do
just
that.
watched Vertigo, and he's not the villain of Vertigo, but he's not the dad from It's a Wonderful Life in Vertigo. He's a much more complicated and sketchy guy, and it's really cool. I actually thought he was amazing in that movie, but I wish I'd done it for the show. I just happened to see it,
But
but
the point is, you've got this guy that played generals and presidents and all these good
right.
guys. And when he was in Westerns, he always played the good guy. And now he's not just a bad guy, he's like the ultimate bad guy at this point.
Right. Really
He
slimy
rapes
bad
women
guy,
and
yeah.
he kills children and stuff like that. So
I don't think I saw him double park or in a handicap spot, but otherwise I think he did just about everything I could imagine.
that would have been terrible. All I'm saying is that it's a gamble that the director took. Maybe it didn't work in it for American audiences who wouldn't have expected it, but also didn't like it. I don't like seeing him do that.
I thought he was
Maybe they're
cool in that
uncomfortable
role.
with it
I
or something.
liked watching him. I wanted to go and watch some Henry Fonda movies like after watching this. Like I thought he was really
You'll
cool.
be disappointed because he's such a good guy and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
This is
I
actually
remember him
this
now
is.
in Longest Day. That's right.
I think it's more difficult to be a good actor as a villain because a villain is typically
Oh,
two-dimensional.
no. No, I
No, no,
totally
no.
disagree.
No, a villain is typically two-dimensional. That's what I'm saying. Typically
But you can
two-dimensional.
go over the top as a villain in such a fun, like Alan Rickman in either Die Hard or Robin Hood. I was just listening to this podcast about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and how Kevin Costner just kind of showed up on the set like at the last minute and didn't do any
Wow,
preparation.
he's
And
terrible
Alan
in that
Rickman just
movie.
ate his lunch the whole time, just completely acted circles around him. Because, well, first of all, he's a great actor, but also because he's just that
But
part is
see,
hilarious.
you're talking about masterful performances by really good actors, though.
Yeah.
For every one of those, there are 100 other two-dimensional, terrible, villains out there because they're just villains.
I guess so.
I mean,
Yeah,
the
I guess
big
I
ones
kind
that
of think it's.
stand out, you've got the Joker in the Batman that we watched. You've got the Joker in the second Batman and Dark Knight. But those actors are amazing, and those performances
Well, that's true. That's true.
that's why we remember them so much.
Yeah,
Think of any
it's
other bad
difficult to
guy.
stand out as a hero, you know. I think it's difficult to stand out as a good guy. I think you're just kind
Think
of.
of any other bad guy in any other Western, though. I can't think of any, really.
Well, like I
I
said,
mean,
in
maybe I
Shane
could.
is Jack
Jack
Palance,
Palance.
but
He's
it
an Academy
stars
Award
Jack
winner,
Palance.
you know?
Yeah, it stars Jack
So.
Palance's face though. Jack Palance is just amazing looking as a villain. I don't even know that he really does
Well,
anything.
that's
He just
true.
looks. He looks like he could just kill everybody the second he looks at somebody. He's like
Do you
leaning against
remember?
the wall when you first see him, and he just looks like murder incarnate. He's just
Do you
amazing.
remember
He
when
just.
he won an Oscar
Yeah, and he
for
did
City
push-ups on
Slickers?
stage.
He
One
does
armed
the
push-ups.
one arm push-ups at like 85.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Well, anyway, I think we should probably talk about our biggest surprises here. So you had this
Okay.
foisted upon you. I mean, yours is going to be the vote on the film because you were the
Yes.
foistee. But also, I think you should go first for biggest surprise.
Okay.
Or maybe
The
I
biggest
should, since I
surprise.
chose it. Anything that surprised me is strange that it surprised me, right? Well, anyway, go ahead. So.
I guess. Well, my biggest surprise actually wasn't in this movie. It was when I was doing research and I learned that Sergio Leone turned down director's role for Godfather because he didn't like the way the mafia is portrayed. I don't know if that was good or bad. If he, but whatever, he didn't. He
Oh.
didn't. He didn't agree with it, the portrayal of the mafia. So he turned
Hey,
it
I don't
down.
like the way the mafia is portrayed.
Right? Come on, they're good
Come on,
guys, you know. My brother,
man.
he's my
They're good
brother. He
fellas.
imports. He imports olive oil. That
Legitimate
was a huge
Italian
surprise.
businessmen are getting a bad rap from this film.
Yeah, right. So that was a huge surprise for me.
That is a big surprise. Wow, that's really interesting. That would have made sense. I mean, he'd be the well, Coppola's Italian though, right? He's just Italian American.
He's Italian American, yeah.
But I
Yeah.
mean, that's what the movie's about, Italian American. It should be an Italian American who directs the film. It's that's who it's about.
I don't know. Well, I mean, somebody that has at least a little bit of history or,
Yeah.
somebody in their family speaks Italiano. I hope this podcast never makes it to anybody in Italy, though. I'll shoot us both. You guys are
You know,
suck.
we have had downloads from just about, I would say about 80% of the countries in the
Oh,
world.
Lord.
Definitely Italy. Italy is on that list.
Ugh.
We get some weird places that download the pod though. It's strange. Just like every single country in South America except Paraguay,
Really?
to the point where I considered doing a film about a book from Paraguay just to try to capture that
Maybe
last
it's because
country.
you call it Paraguay and not Paraguay
Paraguay.
instead
Oh
of
man,
Paraguay.
well,
That's
Paraguay,
probably why.
Paraguay.
Now that I said it correctly, though,
So
yes.
I started out with a biggest surprise. I was kind of surprised that the female lead turned out to be a prostitute. I thought that was an interesting choice, and I did not think
Yeah.
that they would go there. And I thought that was done with a little bit of sophistication. Like I thought that was handled pretty well. I guess that's actually a theme in Western films, isn't it? Because the role of women is very limited in the West. They're
Yes,
put into bad positions. You're either
right.
like a piece of property to be traded around or potentially
Yeah.
threatened, or you're a prostitute. There's not a lot of
That's a good point. You know what's interesting? So that's a character. That is a character in the canon. And it started with a movie called Stagecoach, that it was John Wayne's first big budget movie. It was in, I want to say, like 39 or something like that. But in that movie, you've got the prostitute with the heart of gold. So one of the characters, one of the passengers on the stagecoach, and they always allude to it. No, they always say, oh, she's a working girl or a dancing girl or a madam or something like that, right? Miss Kitty was a madam in Dodge City. They never really get around to saying it, but she had girls. She ran
Is
the
that on
Long
you're
Branch
talking about
Saloon.
on Gunsmoke?
Yeah, and Gunsmoke. Miss Kitty
Oh yeah.
was
Jotted down as biggest
yeah.
surprise was the prominence of the prostitute as a character, or
Yeah.
that character turned out to be.
Right.
But what was a weird surprise, and this is kind of a footnote type of surprise, the actor who plays the auctioneer is a very familiar face. I mean, I was looking through his IMDb trying to find out what is this guy from? Like, I know he was in Doctor Strangelove. He plays the guy who, when the general is trying to take over the base and one of the soldiers comes in and like arrests him, he's that character. That's what I really remembered him from. But he's all
Oh,
over
interesting.
TV in the
Interesting.
60s. And
Huh.
on his IMDb credits was Chester Copperpot in Goonies.
What?
And I was like, you mean
Wow.
the desiccated corpse that they find inside the mines? What was there a de There must have been a
Oh,
deleted scene. Oh, there
He
was
had
a
an
photo.
ID. He had an ID.
Oh, that's
Remember?
what it
Oh, no,
was.
no, no. The newspaper. The
The
newspaper clipping.
newspaper. That's what I was thinking. There
Yes.
must have been
Yeah,
a
the
newspaper
newspaper. That's
photo.
right.
And they got this guy
That's
to
right.
play Chester. I was surprised that
Yeah.
Chester Copperpot is in
That was that's
IMDb.
awesome.
I think it's come down to the time where you, as the foistee, need to weigh in. And I'm
We're supposed
curious because
to.
I'm sensing ambivalence. There's a
Don't you have to
disturbance.
sell it to me?
I don't know how I feel about the film that I want to sell it to you, but I think to some extent, I think you could argue this is, like I said, Pulp Fiction is like the apotheosis of Quentin Tarantino and everything he does. All the Pulp Fiction, I think, is there's so much more going on. This is like the height of what Sergio Leone does. So if you like his movies, you have to ask yourself whether this is the classic or whether the early stuff with Clint Eastwood is the classic. I don't know. I mean, this gets awfully big ratings from people all over the dial, and I did appreciate it quite a bit. I love the quiet scenes, like the first part where there's no music. There's just that windmill sound going over and over again, and I
Yeah,
really do appreciate.
he liked those things. You know, he liked these weird noises that things made, like the train always huffing and puffing or whatever,
It's a
or
really cool
sighing.
juxtaposition because you've got the Ennio Morricone like soundtrack, which is phenomenal, like absolutely perfect and phenomenal. And so there's moments where he tries to just get rid of that, and when that's gone, you've got these amazing diegetic sound effects that drive things. Except the harmonica, I saw in the Wikipedia article they were referring to the diegetic harmonica, and I was thinking that is not the sound of someone playing harmonica. That is
That's terrible.
piped in music from somewhere else. It doesn't even really sound like a harmonica.
It was terrible. It was annoying.
So I mean, I think this is a beautifully done film. I think the actors are great. I love Jason Robards in this. I love Henry Fonda. Charles Bronson, I don't think this is one of my favorite performances of his, but he's cool. He's just a cool guy. He's charismatic and fun to watch. I love Claudia Cardinale a lot. So
Hello.
the cast was great, but then as soon as you get below those four, you drop down to Jack Black looking dude who runs the Chinese laundry, who's a disaster. Like absolutely
He
terrible,
was pretty
terrible dub,
terrible.
terrible actor, not even credited, by the way. That's how bad that guy was in this
That's
movie.
how
He's
bad he
not,
was, yeah.
he's in like four scenes. He's totally in the movie and has a
He, well,
bunch
he
of
has
lines and
a big
not
speaking part. I
credited.
mean, he actually he they need him to make the movie happen. So, I mean,
I don't know. I'm gonna leave it up to you to make the vote. I would
man.
be on the fence myself. I don't think this is a bad movie. I think this is a hugely influential movie, but I'm gonna leave it to you. I don't know. We'll see if we're gonna toast.
I'm just going to cut right to the chase. I don't think this is 25th AFI's best movie ever. I just don't see it, man. I think a lot of that work might have come from critics closer, more contemporaneous than we are. Again, you've had 6 years of Sergio Leone's movies by now, by the time this comes out, I mean. And so it's sort of more of the same, but with a bigger budget. If something works, it works. I mean, you can argue that Scorsese's movies all sort of look alike. He has a lot of the same tactics and stuff like that. A lot of the same sort of shots and stuff like that. But he seems to be
I
able
think
to make it.
Scorsese's guilty of that big time, but like Kubrick,
Yeah.
every movie's different. That's why I
Every
think
movie's
Kubrick
different, right? Every
better,
movie's
but
different with Kubrick and with some others. I mean, oh man, it's an annoying movie. It's novel with the good, the bad, and the ugly, the squinty eye things, where
So I,
it's
one thing I noticed that I think will make you like this movie we watched a little better. The European version is 2 hours is 20 more minutes longer.
Oh
This
Lord.
2 hours and 45, that's the American cut after they got rid of some stuff.
Like
So
I
the
said,
film could be.
I don't think it's attention span. I think it's just novelty. I think the novelty's worn off on his sustained shots in somebody's eyes for 2 minutes, with the loud music playing in the background as it rises and everything else. And then all of a sudden there's a quick flash of light, blam, the guy's dead. Okay. You've got 12 minutes of suspense going from eye to eye to eye to eye. Far away shot, centering shot, centering shot, back to eyes, back to eye. The same exact same thing as any of his early movies, with the choir and the instruments rising above to this din that you just can't stand. When all of a sudden somebody twitches and next thing he's dead. And it's too fast to even really enjoy. It's not like you can really enjoy somebody pulling out his gun and shooting. It's just, it's over. And you're like, oh, well, that was kind of a letdown after all that. Man, I'm sorry. I'm knocking Tilson's classic.
Oh, all right.
This is a first in a while. This is a first in a
It's
while.
been a
Now,
while. It's been a while. But we've been serving ourselves
here's the thing.
softballs. We've been doing things like the wasteland, where it's what are we gonna vote against that?
Well, okay, but see, we toasted the good, the bad, the ugly. That was his entrance into this. This is the same thing with a bigger budget. He didn't change anything other than location because it cost more money. And maybe the acting was a little bit better. Now he had like four or five actors instead of just like two or three, maybe. It's the same movie, not the same movie. Well, it is sort of the
Yeah,
same movie.
pretty
It's a different
similar.
plot.
If you think about, you got the three guys. One of them's goofy, one of them's evil, and one of them's like a little more of a hero. Pretty much, Clint Eastwood is like Charles Bronson. Lee Van Cleef is like Henry Fonda, and then obviously Jason Robards is playing Eli Wallach's character, which is pretty similar in a lot of ways. They're all done with a little more psychological maturity, I think, in this one, but still pretty similar to that. So.
So I just don't know. I think the reason this is included is it's included as an example of that, because that's important. This is sort of a movement, and there's a lot to learn if you're a movie, if you make movies, if you're a director or you're a cinephile. This is something to study for sure. But it's just, man, it's so taxing to watch this movie.
It's long. It's long. You could cut some. You just need to, I think you need to punch a
And
little.
having it's taxing having seen his other movies, which we have. I mean, we've done it on this show. So yeah, I just can't, brother. I'm sorry.
No, I think I'm with you. I would 100% glass up in the air toast Henry Fonda in this film. I think he's great, but I think I've made that clear how I feel about that. And honestly, I thought Jason Robards is great too, but I'm just, I can live with your refusal to toast this purported classic. So
Fantastic. Well, that's a once in a
I think
once
that's, yeah, I think that's where we're going to land this time. Well, like I said, we challenged ourselves. We did
We
something we
did.
didn't know how we felt about.
No,
So I think,
kudos to you for doing it. I know our next one's going to be really controversial, and there's a big chance that that one won't get any traction at all.
want to tell
So
the listeners what you've chosen?
we are doing Johnny Cash's Live at Folsom Prison, 1968. So,
And isn't it going to be kind of hard to not again drink Tennessee whiskey when we're talking about Johnny Cash? Or are we just going to do painkillers? I guess we'll just do painkillers and smuggle them in our
Ludes.
guitar
I think
case.
they're called Quaaludes, weren't they?
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, I didn't know what it was he was smuggling through the airport when he got arrested. I saw the film, so
No,
I.
he smuggled it from Juarez, man. It was the border crossing at Juarez.
Oh, is that what it was? Oh,
He
okay.
got locked up in El Paso. They don't make
Oh, wow.
enough of a big deal about it here in our
There should be a
where we're at.
plaque. There
There
should be a
should be a
plaque on
huge
the wall.
plaque. There should be like
I mean,
a Johnny
there's a plaque
Cash
on the wall
lockup
where
days or something.
Billy
They
the
should have
Kid
a
was locked up in
festival.
Mesilla,
Yes, they should have
and that's
festivals about this
apparently big
stuff,
history.
man.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
exactly.
don't know.
So anyway, so
Anyway, well, I'm sure it's going to fail spectacularly because that guy can't sing or write.
I think we're going to end up with a bullpen episode in between, because check this out. I
What's
am
up?
on my way to Dork Weekend 9, where I go with
Nice.
my buddies and we play D&D for a couple of days. And I
Nice.
talked them into watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail and doing just a big everybody talk about it for a Toasting the Classics episode. So I don't know how well that's going to go, but that's the plan. We're going to try that out.
Good luck to that. Can I tell you real quick a neat piece
Sure.
of a fun fact about the Holy Grail? Do you know who funded that movie?
I have no idea.
George Harrison.
Nice.
He's
Maybe I knew that.
he's a personal friend of not John Cleese, but one of the other actors, and
Nice.
they couldn't find any funding for it, and Harrison mortgaged his house to pay for that movie, and then made it back in spades. Obviously, he made like double his money.
Maybe we should have you appear in holographic image in the middle of the room, like
I'll
standing
be
in the
like
back
Tupac.
like that. Yeah, exactly. So, but
Make me young and skinny and like ripped, just like Tupac was when in his
nobody
holographic
would have any
performance.
idea who the hell you were, Clint, if we did that.
Very good. Touche,
Use the
you piece
audience.
of anyway.
All right,
All right,
so
well,
we did not toast Once Upon a Time
didn't
in the
toast.
West, and I apologize to Quentin
Glasses
Tarantino. I
down.
know he's a listener, so I'm sorry for that, but for Toasting the Classics, this is Dave MacArthur,
And this is Clint Lanier.
and peace out, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Peace.
That's it for episode 94 of Toasting the Classics. For those playing along at home, and for those brave enough, mix up some rum, vodka, gin, and Midori to make a hand grenade for our special Dork Weekend 9 discussion of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Do yourself a favor and skip the Everclear in that drink. If you'd like to get in touch, please send us an email at toastingtheclassics@gmail.com. Send us show ideas, comments, complaints, and let us know your pick for the 40 minutes that could have been cut from this movie. Check out my blog at theattractivenuisance.com and follow us on Twitter @reactivenuisance. Our music was written by Michelle MacArthur. See you next time on Toasting the Classics.